Good. Very nice work. Let me ask you something. How do you get them down so small?
Hey, there goes Elvis! Yo, Kenny!
Well, looks like I'm next. Good thing, too. I gotta do a photo shoot for GQ in about an hour and a half. Yeah, they've been after me for months. Doing some kind of underwear deal, I don't know what. Oh, hey, where are you going? Hey, stop it!
Hey, you're messing up here! Come on! Whoa! Whoa! Stop it! Whoa! Hey, this might be a good look for me.
Tango waltz or the rumba, Signora's dance has no title. You jump in the saddle, hold on to the bridle. Jump in the line, rock your body and time. Okay, I believe you. Jump in the line, rock your body. Rock your body, child. Jump in the line, rock your body and time. Okay. Shake, 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 Signora. Shake your body line.
Welcome to the Futile Podcast. We got Mark tonight. And Ian, and don't forget to...
And Harry Belafonte.
And don't forget to check, you can look up, search Futile Podcast, it might be listed as Futile Title at Podcast Alley, and you can go there and you can subscribe to the podcast through that. You can also vote for us.
Rock your vote.
Rock the vote for sure. You can check the show notes or download the MP3s at www.granatseed.com/futilepodcast. And you can send us emails at futilepodcast@gmail.com if there's a request to something you want us to review, or maybe you got a argument with some critique we lay down on something. Anyway, tonight what we got is we got Beetlejuice, Tim Burton film from, was it the late 80s?
Yeah, I'd say this was about 88.
88, yes. Young Winona Ryder, a young Alec Baldwin, a young Gina Davis. So this film basically... It's a fairy tale of sorts. You got the young couple, played by Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis. I get the impression that they're not necessarily newlyweds, but that they're still sort of in that sort of early marriage stage. They got their nice, expensive nice house that they're fixing up that they've been working on out in the country of Connecticut.
I get the impression they've been together forever, like since high school.
Well, maybe they're like high school sweethearts, but... They've probably just recently bought this house and started doing something with it. You know, like within like the last year, maybe. They've been working on it and fixing it up and everything. It's kind of like they put a lot of sweat equity into it. And it's not perfect. It's not finished yet, but they're doing it. And so it's sort of a sweet, idyllic little scenario with the nice little country hardware store where you can go in and get what you need and just leave the money on the table and, you know, which is what happens.
Well, it was Maitland's.
Yeah.
It was his hardware store.
Oh, that's
right. That's really, how they afforded the house.
I never really got that it was his own
hardware store. That's why he bought the Volvo.
Yeah, I never really got that it was his own hardware store.
Yeah, that's why he just takes what he wants.
But he leaves it open for other people to do the same, I guess, because there was no one there working there. I didn't see him use a key to open the door.
You know, in a town like that, you could almost get away with the honor system.
That's what I mean. It's like...
Especially with, you know, old Joe, the barber,
next door. Yeah, and that's sort of what it's sort of making a point at the beginning, is that it's sort of this old fairy tale kind of silver town from Joe Dirt type thing but it's in Connecticut, where, you know, it's blue skies every day, and they got their nice little... It looks kind of like the Psycho house, but it's not. You know, it's kind of got the Norman Bates look to it.
And then
they die, and in typical, way ahead of anything like...
But the dog survived.
Yeah. Way ahead of anything like Sixth Sense, there's that period where they don't know that they're dead yet, and they kind of have to discover it to their own strange horror. But the whole film, it isn't really, like... There are elements of it that could be described as horror, but there's nothing really... particularly disturbing or scary. I mean, when I was a kid and I saw this, I think the snake scared me a little because snakes are just kind of creepy to me.
Oh, that the sandworm was.
Yeah, the sandworm is kind of this thing out of Dune, and it's very science fictiony. I mean, and even even then, the effects, the visual effects and stuff, and the creature effects and makeup and everything are very. Very theatrical and very overdone to the point where they read like. Fake. They read, you know, the stop motion stuff and everything. It reads very organic and just weird and doesn't, you know, it looks off and it looks out of place. Especially like the sandworm stuff when like they go into that world. It's very like bright and
colorful.
There's
no sense of realism.
Yeah. So, and the film's, like I said, it's a fairy tale. It doesn't really have a lot to that. The yuppie couple shows up after the fact and then decides that they're going to turn... That one of them's just a crazy late 80s artist and she's got to turn everything into
strange... With her buddy Otho.
Yeah, with Otho, who's my favorite.
You just like them red shoes, don't you?
I think Otho should be in, like, more movies. They should do stuff that's just about Otho.
You know, it's funny. There was... It's like the Robert Goulet thing.
Yeah.
I can only think of two things he was in, and he was...
And Dick Cavett's in this movie? But Dick Cavett and Robert Goulet are both in this movie, and their performances are reasonable, and there's not a lot to them, but it's just... It's very strange. And then... the choices of music, like you said, the Harry Belafonte stuff. I mean, you've got the Tim Burton theme, which is very iconic, and it's early Burton, you know? It's very brum, brum,
brum, brum. Oh, everyone, the Danny Elfman?
Yeah, or the Danny Elfman. Yeah, not Tim Burton, but Tim Burton directed it. And this film
I might have to look up that song now.
Yeah, in a weird way, this film is like, I think Burton has become sort of derivative lately, doing the same kind of... He's gotten more into the dark stuff. Just in his catalog of stuff, even something like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory had that kind of weird. Maybe he's just
the original was kind of dark.
Yeah, the original was dark, but it wasn't as
which was really bizarre.
It was more pleasant. I don't know. I just saw the trailers and stuff. I didn't really see the actual.
I haven't seen the latest one.
But I don't know. I might be judging it unfairly.
Being kind of disturbed by
some of the stuff that he's done recently. I've just been. I don't know. I've been kind of wanting to see him.
I haven't seen what he's done recently.
I've been wanting to see him just do something different. And so who knows? Maybe he will. But with this film, you really do get, in a weird way, that Burton is making fun of the kind of people that might be associated with him. You
should do an adaptation of Three's Company.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
I think that would be.
And I guess it's unfair, because he did do something like Big Fish, which I enjoyed and thought was a good film.
I haven't seen that, but I wanted to.
Yeah, it's pretty good, and it really doesn't... It's got some moments of interesting fairy tale quality to it, for sure. It's more like this film. It's more like Beetlejuice. It's more of a...
Well, you know, it's like an...
optimistic type film.
Nightmare Before Christmas kind of has the same sort of
thing. Oh, but Nightmare Before Christmas, I mean, and even the Batman films, they've got this sort of visual aesthetic that's very
gothic. Batman was different.
It's very gothic and dark and everything. And this film, there's not a lot of that. There's absurdism and there's crazy zany stuff with the visual effects.
Which really makes me think of Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah, it's got the Pee-wee's thing, and even, like I said, Big Fish, these sort of fairy tale elements of stuff that's happening. I don't know.
I want to say Tim Burton directed something.
Oh, he directed
after
Frankenweenie. When did he do Scissorhands? Was that before Beetlejuice?
That's like 90.
It was after? Okay.
Yeah, because it was Winona Ryder then.
That's true, and she was the older. Okay. Well, I mean, I just think that it's funny the way that this film makes fun of that sort of snooty, bizarro art crowd, you know, because that's basically what Catherine O'Hara is supposed to be. She's supposed to be this woman that thinks she's got great art, but it's just this terrible, ridiculous stuff.
She's just expressing herself.
And she takes this nice, quaint little house that, I mean, it needs some work. I think we both agreed that it's not necessarily
our... The house is kind of creepy.
It's not necessarily our aesthetic, but what she turns it into is completely wrong for that house, you know?
I love the fact that it had a million fireplaces.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't feel comfortable driving up to that house at the end of the day.
Yeah, it would be a little... It's a little bit strange.
I'd be waiting for, you know, some... Yeah, and like you said, you put it perfectly, psycho.
It's the Bates. It's the Bates Motel.
You know, Anthony Perkins run out and stab me. You know, I don't know.
For sure. I mean, there. You mentioned that again. The way it opens is interesting too. With the long sort of shot of the town, and then you realize that the town looks very artificial, and all of a sudden you're like, oh well, this is a model. It just looks fake, and. And then you see the spider come over the top of the house, and then you're like, oh, okay, it is a model. It is fake. By the time you get to the house, you realize it's fake. But that whole pan and that camera movement following the road is similar to the way The Shining starts in terms of that road up to the place where, you know. So it's in a weird way, it may be a vague reference to that film, just because it was also about, like, ghosts and hauntedness in a place.
Which led to its very own cartoon.
Beetlejuice?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if The Shining, that's sort of a non sequitur what I'm talking about. But yeah, I know. I enjoyed the cartoon a lot when I was a kid.
I did too. There was a lot on ABC, I think.
I don't know what it was. I just remember seeing it like syndication, like on Nickelodeon or something.
I really, I used to watch it Saturday morning.
Yeah.
There was that. There was the Ghostbusters. I think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was on CBS and then NBC. Wow, taking me back.
Yeah. I mean, looking at this film now, it's 92 minutes. It's got a pretty good pace to it. But it ultimately kind of doesn't work for me in a lot of ways in terms of the way the narrative is structured. I mean, basically, the film is billed as a vehicle for Michael Keaton's kind of zany humor. As this Beetlejuice character. But they don't overuse it. They don't overuse it, but the way that they do use it, it's sort of like he comes in and out, and the consistency and the motivations for them to interact with him, it's not almost like it's not even really about him. He's kind of a weird side character.
He's not the main character.
I know, he's not the main character, which I think I had a lot of problem with as a kid, because I kind of... That's why I like the cartoon a lot more. Because he is the main character in the cartoon, and it's more fun, and it seems like it fits him more, because he's more of a funny, goofy character, and in this one circumstance, he kind of goes too far with it, and then it becomes kind of creepy and kind of scary.
But it is supposed to be creepy and scary. He's not a fun...
Yeah.
He's not a fun character. Well, he's not... He's funny, but I mean, yeah. The humor's a little dark.
Yeah, I mean...
I mean, the guy would be killing people, and it'd be kind of funny, but he really wouldn't care.
I guess that's true. I mean, I don't know if I get that level of it, but I see what you mean. I mean, really what it's about is it's this sort of couple that's... It's trying to be about this sort of couple that's very sweet and idyllic, and then them kind of becoming the surrogate parents to this girl who's very in a bleak situation. She's got the stepmom that's crazy artist taking Valium, and then she's got the dad who's kind of burned out on being a New York real estate guy, and he's just trying to relax, and he doesn't know how to handle his daughter really at all.
We need to talk about Bob Goulet.
Yeah. Bob Goulet's Maxie.
Yeah, shit.
But, I mean, what's really going on there, they try to hint at it in places, but it sort of happens too quickly, and I don't think you really ever get the, you know, surrogate parent-child connection.
Only at the end.
They try to hint at it earlier on, you know, that Gina Davis really kind of cares about her and everything, but...
Because they never had a kid.
So
it works out perfectly.
Exactly, but you never... I don't know, it just feels like it happens, and I mean, there are long periods of time that occur in this movie that you don't see, but I think those are supposed to be happening for the humans, the living humans, because they kind of mention that when they go off to...
Right, these huge changes in the house.
Yeah, they go off to the nether world, and then 2 months pass, and so on and so forth.
Different dimensions.
And so it kind of makes grounding any one of the characters' behaviors, or trying to get a sense of anyone's, like, what's happening to anyone... a little bit difficult. I mean, ultimately...
It's not one of those movies. It's not... The movie is not about the characters. It's about zaniness. I mean, really.
Yeah, I know. But ultimately, it is about these two pleasant people who had an unfortunate tragedy befall them.
Not really, because they're honestly not that interesting.
Well, I mean, you know, I know. But by default, you kind of start off not disliking them. They're likable, you know. They're decent, reasonable people.
They were just a little bit too stupid for me.
Because they swerved and missed the dog.
Well, I mean, that bothered me a lot.
Because you,
of course, you know, they could have found a better way. For them to die that didn't require them to be quite so stupid.
That's true.
I mean, even Beetlejuice, the first thing he's looking at their obits is like they look stupid.
Yeah, I guess
they're suckers.
They're simple and they're suckers, and so you know, there's not really likability there. I mean, so I suppose really there's no one that's all that likable in this film, but still, you kind of feel for
him. I always felt for Dad. I always liked Dad.
I suppose, but you get the impression that he's kind of an asshole, too. He's trying to turn the town into some kind of sideshow.
That's just his nature starting to come out, which he's trying to get away from, but he can't because of his wife, mostly.
They keep pulling him back in, yeah.
Yeah, they keep pulling him back in, but he's trying.
So I don't know. I mean, I just think that for what it's trying to do, for the zaniness factor, it seems to work, but it's structured around something that's really got a plot, but the plot, it like it kind of works in fits and starts. And so ultimately you get a storyline. You get that the motivation of these two people is to get their house back. And things kind of are neatly wrapped up. But it just, the route to getting to it and the way that it happens feels, like I said, very fits and starts. And so there's no, the struggle is for a little bit and then it isn't. And then it is, and it is. It's almost one of those movies that you can watch and you can feel like, well, what really happened in it? And you're like, I don't know. There was kind of a collection of strange scenes, and then everything worked out for everybody in the end, I guess. And so, like you said, it is definitely a zany thing, but it's tough to call it, like, a movie that works. I think, like you said, you have to kind of watch. It's the kind of movie you're going to watch when you just want to see some of that stuff. You want to see some creative, bizarre Tim Burton...
Right, but it wraps itself up really quickly.
And then it takes care of itself.
You know, and in my opinion, that's just kind of the point of the movie, is just to show all this weird-ass shit. It's, you know, it's a vehicle for Harry Belafonte craziness and weird stop-motion animation. And, you know, it's just letting Tim Burton's imagination run wild, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for inner peace or... you know, expand my mind from this movie.
That's true. I mean, I kind of feel like there is moments of that they
kind of... And if you're a kid, it was cool.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I own this movie. You own this movie. I mean, I don't know. For me, like, the stuff with the couple...
Do we like Act 2?
Yeah. The stuff with the couple at the beginning, him, like, working on the model and just this sort of idyllic thing, it's tough not to, like, really see something there that seems very romantic and very pleasant and kind of nice. And then I guess they kind of have that again at the end... And so that's just the way it is.
But, you know...
It's got its handful of jokes. They're going to be stuck in that house for 125 years, so they might as well have a good time.
They ought to just go play around the afterlife, because it just kind of snaps with, like, a day's month. So, I mean, hell, they spend a year...
That seems to be the thing they could explore. I don't know. Like I said...
All they got to do is draw a door.
They hint at a lot of complexities in this world, and then they kind of don't really explore some of them. So it's almost like if they had just done less of that, maybe you wouldn't... feel like you wanted a little more of that to understand a little more what's going on with that.
But like I said, I mean, it's not... The movie's not based in reality, so it's easy to punch holes in it. But that's kind of pointless. I'd like to talk about the actors, though, and where they've come and gone in the time.
Yeah. You got Alec Baldwin when he was
younger. Alec Baldwin, you know, ends up...
When he was still in the bubble. For any 30 Rock fans, I'd get that reference.
I haven't seen it. And yeah. I'm a huge Tina Fey fan, and I still haven't seen it.
It's a good show. You like it.
I should. Well, you know, Alec Baldwin, even though he really comes across as a major asshole, he's got the chops.
No. I probably don't have anything to like about him as a person, but he's great in that show. He is funny as all hell in 30 Rock. And in this, he's just, like you said, all the characters are pretty uncharismatic.
This is really towards the beginning of his career. Yeah, really kind of. A lot of weird shit.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I just like, do you see Miami Blues?
Yeah, but it's been
a long
time.
Plays Tall Scumbag is right around the same time. I mean,
and then, Hunt for Red October.
Then he did Hunt for Red October.
That was kind of
favorite of those movies.
But he was still kind of... I don't know. It took him a while to kind of come into his own. I would say that...
He was kind of stiff.
He didn't really do anything too great till like maybe sometime in the 90s.
Well, Glenn Ross was what, 90?
Oh, yeah, that was 90. 90
that was like, I mean, everybody... If anybody had to pick their favorite moment, Alec Baldwin moment, that'd be it.
Mamet wrote that part movie for him to do, and so, yeah, that's fantastic. And then he did, like, Malice and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah, he did went through a dark period, did The Jury.
And that's when I think he did most of his better stuff. I mean, The Jurors panned as being kind of a piece of shit, but things like Malice.
With Jimmy Gandolfini?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. And then Gina Davis kind of had her heyday where she was doing, like, Cutthroat Island and Married to Rennie Harlan and stuff, yeah.
Well, I mean, she started out on kind of a role. She did Earth Girls Are Easy, and then she did The Fly, and...
yeah, Cronenberg's The Fly.
And, you know, I think... Wasn't she dating or married
Jeff Goldblum? Rennie Harlan.
Oh, she did?
I don't know about Jeff Goldblum. They might have been dating for a while. They were dating. She was kind of the flavor of the month for a while there, it seemed like, kind of the it girl.
Well, then it kind of peaked with Thelma and Louise.
I suppose. And yeah, and then she did some stuff after that, and then she kind of fell off the radar, and then she came back and did that...
came back for that show.
That TV show where she was the president for a while.
Well, she started out... This is funny shit. She started out as a freaking Victoria's Secret model.
Oh, that's a weird one.
Yeah,
she's got kind of a strange look. I mean, in this movie,
she's got a model body in a way. Well, she was like super thin back then, but she's tall.
Well, in Beetlejuice, she's got a kind. She's attractive, but she's got kind of an interesting,
she's unique.
Strange look. She's unique. I suppose that's what models usually look like. They're usually not generic hot girl. There's something about them that makes you look at them twice.
And then Catherine O'Hara. I mean, she went on to be. The mom in Home Alone.
And she's done a lot of Christopher Guest movies. And kind of always playing the same character to a degree, where she's just kind of always like this. She's always kind of operating real high and blowing everything off and, you know, finding excuses for everything. You know, like someone says something.
I thought she was actually fairly attractive in this movie, but it's, I don't know why.
Oh, well, you know, she was young.
She was young.
Nothing wrong with that.
Maybe it's the one glove thing.
Yeah, that could do it for you.
I might have a fetish.
You got Jeffrey Jones, who got put away.
Jones. I don't even like going there.
One of the go-to bad guys in 80s movies. And in this one, he's just kind of playing a regular guy.
Yeah, he plays, you know, again, nothing, it's like the weird, whole... Yeah. He played a good guy. Well, you brought up he was going to, you know, destroy the town, but that was his nature.
No, I don't consider him necessarily a bad dude in this. He's pretty
But he just played the captain or whatever in the research guy in Hunt for Red October.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was the guy with the missing leg in Hunt for Red.
He played the nut in Amadeus, which I think guy made his career, which is really kind of bizarre.
That is a weird one.
People probably know him best from Ferris Bueller. And
I didn't even know him. Movie. Know him from that he was in Amadeus. I got to rewatch that at some time.
Yeah, he played the spy. He played the patron.
Oh, okay. I think I can see like that now.
It's like the count or something.
I definitely need to rewatch that one. But
you should.
I own it. so yeah, it's Beetlejuice.
And then we got to talk about Winona.
Yeah, we got Winona. This is one of
who
her first
was
things.
Miss 80s angst girl, and then. It kind of peaked with that, with...
like Heathers or something like that.
Well, Heathers was right about the same time. But no, I mean, oh shit, what was the name of that movie with Ethan Hawke? I saw it like a year ago.
Yeah, exactly. Reality Bites.
Reality Bites.
The Ben Stiller directed film.
Oh, directed and starred.
Yes, well, co-starred. He played the quote-unquote bad guy because he was the guy with the job. And Ethan Hawke was the douchebag with the philosopher's degree. Yeah, it goes to show that hey, women are always going to go for the douchebag with the philosopher's degree over the guy with the job. So there you go. If he's a piece of shit,
well, mommy and daddy were bankrolling her anyway.
Yeah,
so
for the gas money, exactly. Yeah.
Well, she worked out a nice little scam with that.
She
one.
Did. We all know we can do Reality Bites at some point, and I'll put in the Big Mountain cover. I love your way
with the Janine Garofalo and
it's pretty awful.
I was like Eric Stoltz in it.
No, somebody, I don't know. Somebody who it is. Else. It's somebody it. That I just don't remember. Yeah, anywho, we got to wrap this up. So
that's too bad.
I'd
we
have
could to go on and on about Winona Ryder.
I'm sure we could, and maybe we will on a later podcast. But I'd have to give it a B-, I think, for Beetlejuice. It's, like I said, it's got the zany moments. It's just, on this watching of it, I'm just...
You've been given a lot of Bs recently.
Disappointed. Well, but a B- is different than a B.
Not really.
Yeah, a B- is different than a B.
Minuses and pluses, I always thought were bullshit.
Yeah, we could just do the stars then. I don't know. I think I'd have to
but
give
it... But then you start doing half stars.
Well, it's half,
like
still,
three and a
still,
half
still equate to things. If it's out of five, then you know you have to use half.
I don't see why our system has to be so refined that it needs pluses and minuses. I mean...
Fine. Whatever. I'm just going to... I just like to give it a grade so that I can be a little more finite. B-, 2.5 stars, something like that. I mean, it's fun for the zaniness. There's not a lot. There's a couple.
2.5 stars would be like a C+.
Well, maybe that's what I want to give it then. It's a couple funny performance moments. It's a couple little, you know, action
it's
gags.
Quirky.
And you know, then it gets out of its way and it's done.
never did find out what Tilly that was.
Yeah, no, I don't know if it even was. I think it might have been, though. Who knows?
There was the facial structure.
It's not important.